The shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of Bobby Darin. Remember Mac the Knife? If you're old enough, you do. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy and my partner, Big Ed Davis. We thank you for joining us on the last day of the month of August. It is Wednesday, August the 31st. Wow. In a few minutes, Dr. Joel Zinberg is going to be here from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're going to try to talk about two things. First of all, the undoing of mission creep and wokeness at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. You know, they're trying to revamp things there, right? Is it a little bit too late? We're going to talk about that. We're also, if we get the time, we're going to talk about monkeypox. You may have heard a little bit about that going on, and whether or not it's something that is being stifled, as it were. So it's leveling off, apparently. And Dr. Zinberg thinks no thanks to the government. So we'll take a look at that as well. Also, the Department of Justice is pushing back on Donald Trump's call for a special master to review his Mar-a-Lago documents. They say he has things he's hiding. Okay, we're going to take a look. We're going to take a look. And would you believe more people smoke marijuana than cigarettes? I found that to be very surprising. But that is what Gallup is now saying. We are going to examine that. And in our ultimate top 10, you remember our last show, we gave you the top 10 countries with the most Christians. Today, the top 10 countries with the most Muslims. So stay tuned for that towards the end of the show. By the way, don't forget Senior Voice America. Great show. They are on Monday through Friday. They precede our program, but they are on Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. And they're great. Senior Voice America. All right. So, this just came in this morning, and it's usually the first thing you hear when it comes to these figures for the month, but private payroll job growth in August has slowed markedly, according to ADP. Now, ADP is a big deal data processing company for businesses. You know, if you ever work for a large company, a lot of times you'll notice that the check you got from them said ADP because they work through ADP. Anyway, apparently companies are pulling back on hiring amid the growing fears of an economic slowdown. Companies added, according to ADP, just 132,000 jobs last month. Now, that is sharply missing what they hoped for. They hoped for almost or more than 100% of that, 288,000 jobs, 288,000. Now, this is what the chief economist for ADP says. Our data says a shift toward a more conservative pace of hiring, possibly as companies try to decipher the economy's conflicting signals. We could be at an inflection point from supercharged job gains to something more normal. So we'll see where all of that goes. We haven't got the official figures from the government as of yet. Of course, we're still in August technically, right? So we'll get those in a few days. In the meantime, former Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev has died. He was 91 years of age. You know that he's more popular in the United States than he is in Russia? A lot of Russians have never forgiven Mikhail Gorbachev for being a cause of the breakdown of the Soviet Union. It was not necessarily something he wanted. But when he came to perestroika, in other words, when he and Reagan got together, Ronald Reagan, he went there because they were no longer able to keep up in the defense wars with the United States. They were not able to continue economically to do that. And he realized that. And they brought in what was called perestroika. And several years later, the fall of the Soviet Union. In fact, Reagan had left office by then. It was under George H.W. Bush that technically the Iron Curtain came down. But Gorbachev was the leader of the Soviet Union from 1985 until it collapsed in 1991. He was the last leader of the Soviet Union. He helped forge weapons reduction deals with the U.S. and other Western powers. And a very likable guy. So a lot of people, he was not a friend of Putin, or should I say it the other way, Putin was not a friend of his. Putin never forgave Gorbachev for the breakdown of the Soviet Union. He's trying to build it back up again. And it seems like, by the way, if you look at the news recently, it seems like there's a chance that Ukraine may win this war. They're actually now thinking about going into the Crimea and grabbing it back from Russia. That's the eastern part of Ukraine that Russia took from them. So who knows what's going to go on there? It's really getting to be kind of very, very, very interesting, I would say, where all of that is going. This is kind of interesting, too. A majority of people say they smoke marijuana more than cigarettes now. I found that to be very surprising. This is based on data from a new Gallup poll. 16% of Americans say they currently smoke marijuana, with 48% of the respondents sharing that they've tried it at some point in their life. That's the highest rate ever recorded by Gallup. Last year, 12% said that they used marijuana. It was the highest among adults between 18 and 34, with 30% in that age group saying that they smoke pot. 22% consume marijuana edibles. I've never done that one. When I was young, I did try marijuana as a cigarette. It had virtually no effect on me, and I dropped it like a bad habit. But the interesting thing is that marijuana users outnumber smokers of cigarettes. A new record low of 11% of adults reported smoking cigarettes, with approximately 3 in 10 non-smokers saying they used to smoke. That's a steep drop in cigarette use compared to what it used to be. Did you know, Ed, in the 1950s, that almost half of the country smoked? 45%. 45% of people in the 1950s smoked cigarettes. And I would venture to say, watching the old movies on TV, like Turner Classic and all that, that was even higher before the 50s.
Well, it was the cool thing to do, I guess.
Exactly right.
Spark went up. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're a former smoker, correct?
No.
Oh, you're...
I take it back. Cigars.
Oh, okay.
I never...
But you were not a cigarette smoker.
No, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. No.
Excellent. All right. All right. Let us take a smoking break. No, let's just take a regular break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the CDC with Dr. Joel Zinberg.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky. And there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Wednesday and delighted to have back Dr. Joel Zinberg. He's a senior fellow. He specializes in medicines and medical devices at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. He has penned a piece on the CEI website. The key to CDC reform is undoing mission creep and tossing woke programs. Joel, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Good morning. Happy to be back.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. And two things you mentioned, mission creep and woke programs. Let's start with this thing about mission creep. What do you mean about the CDC and mission creep?
Well, I mean, you know, the point of the article was that the CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, has finally admitted what's been obvious to people since the beginning of the pandemic, that the agency's doing a pretty poor job. She's emphasizing, though, that it's just a matter of communication and maybe they didn't do things fast enough. She doesn't recognize the problem is that the CDC has strayed very far from its core mission, which is supposed to be dealing with communicable diseases and public health emergencies. So now it's dealing with things like social justice, climate change, guns, all sorts of things that a lot of other government agencies deal with, but the CDC is being distracted by. So I think they need to refocus on their core mission, and then they will actually do a better job during the next public health emergency.
Indeed. In fact, what you're saying is they lost their way. And you mentioned in your article the fact that they were founded in 1946 because malaria at the time?
Yeah, malaria.
Wow. And they
malaria
just...
Malaria was a problem in the South in the 40s, and that's what the agency was founded to deal with. And it soon expanded so that its responsibilities included other communicable diseases. But nowadays, you wouldn't recognize that original mission. You know, they have priorities talking about reducing racial disparities in health, addressing social determinants of health, injury and violence prevention programs to deal with the growing crisis of domestic, sexual, and gun violence. I mean, this is stuff taken right from their website, and this is all stuff that was issued during the biggest public health emergency of the last 100 years.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder they got things wrong. But amazingly, Dr. Walensky has said that the content of their guidelines and pronouncements was not the problem. And she doesn't get that, you know, they made all kinds of mistakes. It's merely a matter of communication and being nimble enough. But I think, you know, she has to go back to basics.
You know, it seems like this is a perfect example of a government program. It started in 1946. They grow bigger. They never seem to go away. And they lose their way. I just, you can almost point to any program. Maybe it starts out with good intentions. But then they grow so big and so fat and, bulky and the whole bit. And away we go.
Yeah, and away. And as usual, they think the solution to every problem is spend more money. So that's what they're talking about. They say they need more money to rectify these problems. Whereas they don't need more money, they need to reorganize and focus on what they're supposed to be doing. And they may even be able to do it with less money.
I don't think there's any doubt about it at all. We're talking with Dr. Joel Zinberg from the Competitive Enterprise Institute about reforming the CDC. Joel, why don't we just get rid of the CDC? Would that be such a bad idea? Here on our show, we've talked about getting rid of all kinds of things. The Department of Education, on the federal level, that is. Even the FDA, to some extent. You may be, against that. But do you think the CDC could go away and we would still be all right?
No, I think the CDC has a valuable and role to play, which is to collect data on emerging disease threats, to research it, get all the scientific information, and inform the country about that, and inform public health authorities at the state and local level. But it isn't doing that. In fact, that's a big problem. The CDC admits it has no real system to collect data and no real statutory authority to do so. So that's one thing that would be a good area for reform, having Congress create that authority to collect the data both internationally and domestically, and then collate that data and pass it on to the appropriate public health authorities. But that should all be dealing with those communicable diseases and these potential disease threats that we frequently arise overseas and then make their way here. But they're doing everything but that.
What about if we detached it from the government, made it independent?
Well, someone has to fund it, and they have to have the authority to collect the data. So in some sense, it almost has to be the government. But it should be a very narrow role. It doesn't have to be
Why couldn't it collect nonprofit money?
Well, the problem with things like that is you often have trouble getting private individuals to fund something that benefits the public at large. So, this is an area where, it's one of the few areas, it's sort of close to what's called a public good in economics, where you wouldn't necessarily get private individuals to fund it, but that the government actually has a role. But it's a very narrow role, and it's unfortunately a role that the CDC is doing a poor job at.
You also mentioned in your article, again on the website, and people can go and see it there, Competitive Enterprise Institute, about woke programs that the CDC has gotten into. It seems like all the, we got the military getting into wokeness, we got the CDC getting into wokeness. What's going on?
Yeah, well, so as I said, they're talking about things like climate change, the importance of climate change, the health consequences of the climate crisis, or reducing racial disparities in public health. So now if you read their website or many of their pronouncements and guidelines, they're always bending over backwards to show the disparate effects of various programs or disparate effects of health care. They're talking about systemic racism and structural racism, stuff that, maybe it needs to be addressed, but it sure doesn't need to be addressed by the CDC.
Indeed. Again, we're talking with Dr. Joel Zinberg from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And while I was setting up the interview, Joel, I noticed that you also wrote a piece on monkeypox. And I thought I'd bring it into the discussion. You said monkeypox seems to be leveling off, but you say no thanks to the government. No thanks to the government. What did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant was that people take voluntary actions in response to health risks. Now, they have incentives to avoid the risks and costs of infectious disease. And we saw this during COVID, that multiple studies have documented that people began to take actions like staying home or avoiding public places or stop going out to restaurants or crowded areas before the government did anything. And that's exactly what you're seeing. And that most of the effect of any of these mitigation measures was due to people's voluntary behaviors. The lockdown measures were heavy-handed. They weren't targeted to the right people or in the right geographic locations. And what we're seeing, the exact same thing in monkeypox. There's CDC has a survey of the gay and bisexual community, and 50% of them have reported that on their own, voluntarily, they have curbed the sort of risky sexual behaviors that seems to be involved in this monkeypox outbreak. And in fact, what's happened is that since July, you've seen a steady decline in numbers of cases in hospitalizations, and in particular, you've seen that decline in the hotspots of New York City and California.
Well, then that's good news. Would you call
it? The government didn't have to do anything. All the government needed to do was get the information out to the relevant communities. And they've known for months now that in this particular outbreak, and it's unusual, but in this particular outbreak, there is human-to-human transmission, chains of that, which is unusual. And number two, that it seems to be concentrated in the gay bisexual community.
Right.
What they needed to do was get that information out and let those people take the voluntary risk avoidance measures that they are taking. But instead, what they were, the CDC and other government organizations were saying, well, we don't want to be so explicit. We're worried about stigmatizing that community. In fact, they weren't doing that community any favor. They needed to get that information out so the community could take its own voluntary actions, which is in fact what they have done.
Yeah. As you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the AIDS epidemic and the way the government handled that. And a lot of people said that because there was a fear of, like you said, stigmatizing a certain group, that perhaps they could have been a little bit more, open about it, more explicit about it, maybe, more public about it. What do you think?
Well, yeah, no, I think they had to be in this particular instance. This was a situation that started in mid-May, and very soon it became apparent that the disease outbreak, which, as I said, is an unusual disease outbreak because it's taking place outside of the endemic areas in Africa where you usually see monkeypox, and it's in the northern countries of Europe and in the U.S. and Canada. They had to explain to people why this is happening now and let them know. And that wouldn't have stigmatized anyone. You know, there's a big difference between AIDS, which is a fatal disease, particularly at the time back in the 80s and 90s when there were no treatments, and monkeypox, which is, a painful and difficult condition, but it's not fatal. So you didn't need to, it's a different level of stigmatization if you're worried about that.
Indeed. Would you call it an epidemic anymore?
No, not an epidemic. I mean, you're talking worldwide about 50,000 cases. So it's not really an epidemic, but I do point out in the article the U.S. is actually the worldwide leader in cases.
Now, that's interesting. Why is that?
I think we have active gay bisexual communities here.
Mm-hmm. And about 95% of all of these cases are involved with gay people, men?
Just about, yeah. Now, that may not stay the case, but at the moment that is the case.
Okay. I thought I read where you mentioned that it's a non-fatal disease. I thought I read maybe one child may have passed away from it, but I don't know enough about the conditions that...
Well, no, monkeypox can be fatal. But, in the sort of more typical outbreaks, which happened in Africa, you were talking about a few percentage, 1% fatality rate, as opposed to what AIDS was back in the day, 100%
right.
fatality rate.
Right.
And what's interesting in this outbreak is the mortality rate seems to be a good deal lower than the more typical outbreaks that take place in Africa.
So do you see monkeypox kind of slowly dissolving, or what do you think is the final thing with monkeypox?
Well, look, I think the really good news is that it's been leveling. It leveled off and is declining. Hopefully, that continues. Unfortunately, there's sometimes, just as people respond to high levels of risk by changing their behavior, sometimes they respond to lowered levels of risk by going back to that same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So you often get cycles of disease because of that behavior. We'll see, and I'm very hopeful that the people in the gay bisexual community have realized this is a problem, hopefully a transitory problem, that if they continue, to change their behavior for a few weeks or months, we can contain, but we'll, time will tell.
Yeah, and finally, on AIDS, have we finally reached the point where we can say that we've got AIDS totally under control?
No, I mean, look, AIDS is a, even though we now have medications that have turned it into a chronic disease, those medications have side effects, and you know it's an expensive, lifelong process to treat people with AIDS. So, you know, ideally, people would be taking more precautions and limiting the spread of the disease. So, you know, worldwide, it's still a major health problem.
Got it. Dr. Joel Zinberg, it is always a pleasure to have you on. We always learn something from you. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
All right, sir. Joel Zinberg, all right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, the Department of Justice pushing back on Donald Trump's call for a special master to review his Mar-a-Lago documents, saying he's got things he's hiding. So we are going to take a look.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday and the last day of the month of August. So I was watching, Ed, I was watching President Biden yesterday. He was in Pennsylvania. I think he was pushing for John Fetterman, who is running there for the senatorship against Dr. Mehmet Oz, right?
Right.
Well, Fetterman was not there.
He didn't get the memo?
No, he was in Tennessee. Why was he in Tennessee when the president was coming to help push his election in Pennsylvania? Mm. That was an interest. Now, the reason I bring that up is you mentioned to me as I came in today that are we going to have President Biden making some sort of an address? Is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. He's going to address the nation on all the networks, of course.
Okay.
Maybe we should start maybe a little pool. Subjects that will not be discussed.
Oh, yes.
Like the border.
Uh-huh. Or the end of the Afghan war.
Inflation.
Or inflation. How about his son Hunter?
No, that's
I think
out.
We ought to talk.
That's out.
He ought to talk the entire speech about the great relationship that he has with Hunter and how between the two of them they made a lot of money.
Now, and the gas prices have come down a bit, but I'm sure he's going to take a little credit for that. Although none of his policies have changed. It's just that the global demand is way down.
Yeah, we're not buying as much.
And, of course, we're still releasing a million. You know, I got to ask an expert on that. How do we replenish those? Where does it come from?
Because from the oil reserves that we are pulling out?
We're releasing 1 million barrels per day.
Well, we build it up again, supposedly, when we're not in a crisis.
Okay.
The government actually purchases oil from the major companies.
Okay.
Listen, I want to change topics a little bit. You know, this FBI raid on Trump's place is still going on and on and on.
You
and
see
on.
The latest picture? It's like these things on a couch, and they say "top secret," 007 for your eyes only.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Department of Justice is filing its response, opposing the appointment of what was called a special master to review the documents that the FBI took out of Mar-a-Lago, right? It's a little late anyway.
Yeah.
You know that the FBI has been combing through those things, right? Okay. But they say that, if I can find it here, that Trump is hiding stuff. Now, before prosecutors obtained the search warrant, Trump's lawyers said that all the records from the White House that remained at Mar-a-Lago were in storage in a secure room with a double lock on it. But this filing from DOJ said the documents were likely concealed and removed from the storage room, and that efforts were likely taken to obstruct the government's investigation. So now what is Trump doing? Did he go into the storage room and slide some of those documents out and put them under his bed? Or under the dog's, did he bury it in the backyard? What are they implying that he needs to keep and steal?
I don't know, but I don't know what else evidence you need, Paul. I mean, I don't know. Tomorrow, I'm sure, will be discussed. Just open the case, show. Look, they're right there. It even says top secret on there. It says top secret.
Uh-huh.
What more proof do you need?
I don't know. So, apparently, the filing on this response gives the most detailed account of the search by the FBI so far. The department argued in the filing that Trump's request for a special master fails for multiple independent reasons, saying it's both unnecessary and it would harm national security interests. Why would it harm national security interests for a single objective person, or at least a person that's not affiliated with the search itself, to go in there and take a look and say, okay, this stuff is privileged. This is not something you can deal with, you know, as opposed to this stuff being government documents. But they don't want that.
Could it be some information on some of those people in the swamp?
They are looking for anything they can find.
No, I'm saying, does Trump have that?
Right.
Maybe that's what he's got.
That's what they're hoping, maybe, to find stuff on the January 6th deal.
Sure.
You know, they want to find anything. Now, in the meantime, how long has it been that thing in Delaware on Hunter Biden has been going on? Why is the grand jury not indicted?
Well,
I don't understand that one at all.
Well, because the FBI told the Facebook owner, Mark Zuckerberg, to suppress it.
Yes. And speaking of that, an FBI agent who was accused of bias in handling the Hunter Biden investigation has resigned. He's quit.
Yes. Well, that's just
he was forced out.
It's
the truth is
a coincidence.
His name is Timothy Theibault. He was an FBI assistant special agent in charge.
I think it's Theibault.
He claims he's retired. They always retire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was let out of the White House. He was let out of the FBI building. You know how it's kind of embarrassing. After all the years, now I'm not talking about this guy in particular, but when FBI people retire, they actually have to kind of lead them out as if we don't want you stealing anything on the way out.
Right. You know, hey, I've worked at some radio stations where I've seen people escorted out. You know, and other businesses.
I'll be honest, I was escorted out of a place myself.
Sure.
Yeah,
but, you know, I'm sure he wanted to, spend time with the family, tour the country and world, buy a Winnebago.
What are some of the things they always say as they're being kicked out? I'm going to pursue some other activities, and now I'm charting a new course in life.
I'm going to build a birdhouse.
Now, this guy, Theibault, was named by Chuck Grassley. He's the ranking member of Republican.
It's Theibault.
Oh,
because I always thought he kept saying Tim Theibault. It's Theibault.
Theibault. Okay, yeah. So you don't pronounce the th.
Right.
It's T. I apologize.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, Mr.
Casey's listening.
And he might be.
Casey's listening, and any corrections for tomorrow.
I appreciate it. You know, the FBI might be listening to us since we're talking about it, now that I think about it. Anyway, Theibault was named by the Senate Judiciary Ranking Member, Chuck Grassley, as a guy that was doing a little bit of political shenanigans going on with this whole thing with Hunter Biden. And let's see. So Grassley sends a letter
dated July the 18th, that FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney General Merrick Garland, citing whistleblowers who are alleging a pattern of political bias inside the FBI. Well, we knew that there was political bias, sure, going all the way back to getting a court order to try to frame Donald Trump with his involvement with Russians. You remember all of that?
Yes.
And they were screwing around with that, with the judge and everything else. According to Grassley, the whistleblowers said that the Department of Justice and the FBI employees must follow strict guidelines to open any kind of an investigation, and that Tebalt did not follow the guidelines. Now there is a call, by the way, for Christopher Wray to resign. There are people inside the FBI that are coming out anonymously and saying that Christopher Wray, it's over his head. He's not handling things correctly. He's letting things go.
It could be a house of cards, you know?
Yeah, it could be.
It could be one thing leads to another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've got, you know, I think as Judge Judy said, if you don't lie, you don't have to have a good memory.
That's right.
So, you know, things start coming out and the stories are not jiving, you know?
Reminds me of the famous saying, even before all of those people, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. You got to keep, you know, covering yourself. Anyway, you remember that discussion on the podcast, the Joe Rogan podcast, I believe, with Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
Grassley and Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, both Republicans, are calling on Zuckerberg to turn over his communications between the FBI and Facebook. They want to see what the FBI asked him to do. They suspect that the FBI actually interceded in trying to suppress a true laptop situation with Hunter Biden. And so they sent a letter to Zuckerberg. The American people deserve to know whether the FBI used Facebook as part of their alleged plan to discredit information about Hunter Biden. It said, if so, Congress and the American people require clarity with respect to the extent the FBI communicated with Facebook during the 2020 election about Hunter Biden-related info. Here's what I think. If the Republicans regain both houses of Congress, I think Christopher Wray is going to be out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he is technically appointed by, and maybe I'm a little premature, because you get a Republican president and it definitely is going to be out. They're going to get rid of him.
Sure.
You know, he's an appointment, and he comes from the executive department. But Zuckerberg was trying to, do you know how, did you listen to him talk on the show?
Yeah.
He was walking a tightrope.
Yeah.
He was partly responsible himself for the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop info
and
his own.
And Mark Zuckerberg, who owns Facebook, is heavily involved with China. And I'm going to tell some people right now, if you're listening, if you go on Facebook and you see these ads, like for clothing, shoes, candles, and stuff like that, It's like a website to go and buy, and they look like American clothes and American shoes. And you click on it, the website is USA Clothing or something like that. And you click on it, and you order it. Be careful where it's coming. It's all from China, and wow. They've got me three times because I thought it was
American. You thought it was American.
Yes, and what I do is I message, because people leave reviews like, greatest stuff I've ever. Then look at their name of the reviews, Hong Chang Ping, you know, and whatever. And what happens is they have this live communicator that you can message.
So you're saying Zuckerberg is up to his hips and
what happens is you message, is this coming from the United States? And they say it's ship. No, wait, listen, it ships. Yes, sir, it ships from the USA.
Well, of course.
But what happens, folks,
after being shipped from China,
it's made and ordered in China. China then ships it to San Francisco, and then it comes out of San Francisco.
Yeah, that's very duplicitous.
And, Paul, they're all over Facebook. It is totally overrun. When everything that you're ordering, you think, oh, it's coming from Walmart, or it's coming from Home Depot.
So
it's not.
Zuckerberg is compromised. But let's be honest, he's compromised.
When he started Facebook, he didn't want any ads. Now he's got them up the wazoo.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, every time you scroll down every other story, there's an ad for clothing or shoes or whatever. And you wonder why it takes you 3 weeks to get it. It's because it's coming from China.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how is Zuckerberg going to make any money if he didn't advertise on his Facebook?
Just saying he's a two-faced little pig.
Yeah, well, no, he's compromised. There's no question about it. You can tell. Anyway.
There's a guy you want to slap and take his lunch money. That's the guy.
Hey, did you watch that movie on him, whatever it was called?
Yes, yeah.
I thought it was a pretty good movie.
It was. It was a good movie.
Well done.
In that movie, he wants Facebook to be ad-free.
Yeah, right. Good
and
point.
And it did start that way. Now it's like popping up here and popping up there.
By the way, who starred as him in that movie? Do you remember?
I can't remember his name.
He was always the son of that comedian who played, now I'm really forgetting everything.
Yeah. But no, it was a very,
the
very
guy that used to be on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
He played his son. Anyway,
I know who you're talking about.
All right. Anyway, forget it. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, did you know that Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom's in-laws are making financial contributions to Ron DeSantis? We'll talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
So we're back. Freedom Works. Final segment. We're here, by the way, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tantalk Radio Network. We appreciate that you listen to us. And by the way, if you cannot listen live, thanks to Big Ed, he puts all our shows on tape, on podcast, on our website. All you got to do is go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Click on the podcast button at the top. Ed's got all the shows, most recent show at the top. You'll see the top 10. You'll see the guest. You'll listen. You learn, you're happy, you live longer, all the good things. OurFreedomWorks.com. So, here's a great perfect squelch. Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom, who's been a vocal critic of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, has his in-laws sending money to DeSantis.
It'll make for interesting conversation around the Thanksgiving table.
Around the Thanksgiving. According to contribution records on the Friends of Ron DeSantis PAC, the Cybel, I guess it is, and I know you'll correct me because you've become a guy that corrects everything I say.
No. I don't want somebody calling and correcting me.
All right.
And then I have to correct you.
Have you gone through puberty yet, by the way? I got to ask you.
Puberty? Puberty, yes, not puberty.
Okay. Anyway, I pronounce this the Cybel Family Revocable Trust.
Let's go.
Okay, that's Gavin Newsom's in-laws, right? They've all gathered together. Uh-huh. They made a $5,000 contribution to Governor Ron DeSantis in April of this year. Now, the trust is run by the parents of Gavin Newsom's wife.
Right.
So they must be conservatives, I would guess.
I think Governor DeSantis should personally call them and thank them. And
he should.
And what if
I bring him over to Florida?
What if accidentally Gavin picks up the phone, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
Is your mother-in-law there? I just wanted to thank him for the contribution.
I wonder if Gavin Newsom's father and mother-in-law like him.
They probably tolerate him.
They tolerate him, exactly.
Well, this is a telling tale, probably. What state do they live in?
That's a good question. Hold on, let me look. I'm guessing they live in California. Let's see.
It probably
does not say.
If I was writing that article, I would put that in there because that could be a telling tale.
By the way,
how much they like him, they don't live in the
state. Speaking about that, if they don't live in California, Newsom has been making a big deal out of drawing people from Florida to go live in California. I don't think too many people are going to take him up on that one.
It's not working out very well.
No. And Newsom says that those here in Florida should understand that freedom is under attack here. See?
Well,
freedom is under attack here in Florida. So get to California where everything...
Yeah. He could maybe campaign at the border and get people to come over.
DeSantis responded by slamming Newsom's, quote, terrible governance, unquote, and mocking how he now sees a lot of California license plates tootling around in our state.
Didn't they try to remove him?
No. Wait.
Governors, didn't they try?
They might have tried to, but they just didn't get close to getting enough
signatures. Right, I know they tried.
Signatures. Yeah. I think they did, now that I think about it. The guy is really off the... But you know, of all the people that might become the Democratic nominee for president,
yeah.
I think he might be the front
runner. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, really.
He's the guy that wants to ban the sale of new cars in California.
That's right. Exactly. All right.
Here's the funny part. I want to know what kind of car he drives.
Yeah, we ought to find out.
I would check up on
this. First of all, he's driven.
If this guy comes out and says, well, we need to go electric. Now, if I go over there and he's driving some big old Volvo or whatever, you know, it's all...
Well, you know, the hypocritical thing about all of this is all these people that we read about that are pushing green energy or whatever you want to call it are getting in these big planes.
Yeah.
You know, with only two or three other people in them and flying all over the country.
Uh-huh.
And they're getting in these limos, and they've got about seven or eight cars protecting them, and they're driving, you know, these governors driving down the road. Talk about pollution. They're big hypocrites, obviously. You know. Anyway, before we get to our top 10, which is a good one, top 10 countries with the most Muslims, I want to ask you about what's going on in the world of sports, specifically in baseball. We're getting into September now.
Yeah.
We've got one more full month of baseball coming up. And our beloved Rays have been playing fairly well. And you had mentioned that they are getting over a lot of injuries. Are things still going fairly well for them?
It was until last night. Their ace pitcher, Shane McClanahan, was warming up. And he was in the bullpen warming up before the game. And he was pointing to his shoulder, and he left in tears.
Really?
That's not a good sign.
I don't know what's going on.
But the guys that they have picked up to replace guys that were hurt are really coming through now. Now you've got a decision to make. You know, do you bring back these other guys, or maybe you can mix the two of them together? They got a problem. It's a good problem to have, but some of these guys are really... Now, granted, they've been playing some subpar teams. You know, like the Red Sox and now the Marlins that are there again tonight, but they've been playing some subpar teams. They got 9 games left with the Blue Jays. They've got 6 games left with the Yankees and 6 games left with the Red Sox. So there's movement there.
I'm looking forward.
And the Yankees are 7 games up on everybody. And the Rays are in second, 7 games behind.
I think they're going to make the playoffs.
But, you know, it seems that the Yankees are falling at the worst time. Well, a good time for us, but a bad time for them.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, I am looking forward to the Rays making the playoffs. That's all I've got to say. All right. Ed, it is time for our top 10. And we're going to do the top 10 countries with the largest Muslim population. As you know, we did on our last show the top 10 with the largest Christian population. And you have such a good memory. Do you remember the top 2 with Christian populations, Ed?
Yeah. Well, one was the U.S. because we were
It was number one.
Shocked.
You remember number two?
Nobody ever remembers second
That's
place.
That's true. I did kind of trip you up there. Brazil.
Brazil.
Brazil was second. All right.
What's my next choice?
I forget what your next choice was.
No, I was going to... That was my second guess.
Oh, that was your next choice. Yeah, I got it. All right. Okay, here we go. Number 10. The Sudan. The Sudan has almost 40 million Muslims. 97% of their population is Muslim. Very, very few anything else in the Sudan. Number 9. Algeria. Algeria, both in Africa, 41 million plus. And listen to this, Ed, 99.7% of the population is Muslim. There are three people running around desperately trying to get to the border that are not Muslim in Algeria. Number 8.
Is that where the calls come from, asking me if I want to renew my auto insurance policy?
Probably. Number 8. Turkey is number 8. They've got 74 million plus. 90% of Turkey, 90% is Muslim. Number 7.
You know, and they've got nukes, and they're pretty quiet.
And
less provoked.
They used to be our friends.
I know, and less provoked, though.
I'm a little worried about Turkey. Number 7. Iran. I'm a lot worried about Iran.
They're idiots.
82,500,000 Muslims in Iran. 99% of the population. Number 6. Egypt. Egypt has 90 million Muslims, 95% of the country. Number 5, Nigeria, 103 million people, 54% of the country. Ed, you seem very interested.
I am.
Yeah, he's yawning. Number 4, Bangladesh, 150 million, 800,000, thank you. 91% too.
You are nowhere near, go find a good.
Thank you. Whatever that was. Number 3, India. Wait till you hear how many they have in India. 200 million.
Wow.
And that's only, listen to this, 15% of the country. And they have 200 million.
Wow.
It shows you how many people they have in that country.
Wow.
Number 2, Pakistan.
Pakistan.
212 million plus in Pakistan. And that's 97% of the population. All right, Ed, if you've been listening, and I know that you were starting to fall asleep.
No.
If you've been listening, what do you have any idea what the number one country with the most Muslims?
I'm thinking it's going to be one of those stands, like Afghanistan, or we already did Pakistan. So I'll go to Afghanistan.
I'll give you a big hint.
All right.
I don't know if it'll help you. It's a huge series of islands.
Huh. Hmm.
I know, it's difficult.
Hawaii?
How did you know? Roll the drum.
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. Sorry. You do it well. It's Indonesia. Indonesia has 231 million Muslims, that's 87%
of the population. A lot of stuff comes out of there. A lot of products come out of Indonesia.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah. Especially clothing, stuff like that.
Yeah. There you go. All right, thank you so very much for listening to Freedom Works. We will indeed be back on Friday. In the meantime, drive safely, and do remember, freedom really does work.
The way that you make me feel.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Steve Kaifin. The government's authorized the